Our study of Job tonight, and if that might not exactly be the way to phrase that, we finished the book, the study, the text itself last week. But to finish out this quarter before we start our new material this upcoming month, so it'll be a good time while it's fresh in our minds to go back and review. Might not be the right word. Well, it's not the right word. But now that we've got that on our minds, some applications that we can make that might not have been as easy earlier. When we ended last week, I told you we were going to do something along this line. I had no idea what that was going to be. This all just trying to figure out how to best do that. So I didn't have any way to prep you for that or prepare you for that. Does anybody have their outline with them? The original outline? If you've got your outline with you, turn to the introduction lesson. That's what we're going to go through. That very bottom part. If you look at the introduction lesson that we had, the very last little section of that is lessons and applications that we would have gone through. We covered that in 1 week. So by the time we got to that bottom section, we probably went through it in 2 minutes, or whatever was left before the bell rang. But that was the first lesson of the whole thing. That was kicking it off. Hopefully now, 4 months later or whatever it's been, hopefully now those applications have a little bit more juice to them. Have a little bit more thrust to them. So let's just go back to that very first study that we had. But let's emphasize that bottom section, just the application phase. And let's just see, hopefully, what this last quarter has done for us and the things that we have that we can take from this book. We've done the text. We've seen the book. We've seen the history of it. We know what the conversations were. What does that do for me and you? All these thousands of years later, what's that do for us? On your outline, what was the very first one? First application we make. Defending the character of God. Look in chapter 1. It mentions in verse 1 that Job was, the old King James says, perfect and upright. The idea is pure and blameless. And Satan never questioned that. That was never what he argued about. He never argued the character, the morality, the blamelessness. He never questioned the life and the righteousness of it. What he questioned was the motive. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he's the best you've got. But it's not because he loved you. It's not because you're worthy of it. Look in chapter 1, verse 9. Satan answered the Lord. He said, have you seen Job? Have you seen the life that man lives? Have you seen the blamelessness and the uprightness of him? Satan answered the Lord. He said, does Job fear God for nothing? Oh, you think this is just because you're deserving? You think that it's because you're worthy of this? No, he's getting something out of it. He's not doing it for nothing. Settle down, because don't think that it's because you're so glorious. Here's why. Verse 10. Have you not put a hedge around him? Around his house? Everything that he has on every side? You've blessed the work of his hands. You've blessed the substance of his land. Put your hand against him. Touch what he has. He'll renounce you to your face. This is the first paragraph. This is the crux of the book. Why would a man serve God? That's what the book's teaching us. That's an application. Why would anybody serve God? It's got to go deeper. He's done a lot of good things for us. He has blessed us. Look at my life. Look at the possessions. Look what this is teaching. If you remember when Elihu came in, the wisdom of Elihu, that was the first time we really saw a lot of wisdom. And then Elihu was followed up with God himself. You know what never happened in either of those speeches, Elihu or God himself? You never saw, Job, stop talking about, he really blessed you. Be careful what you say about him. He really did a lot of good things for you. No, what Elihu and God said was, this world is his. He's the one that created it. He's what's keeping it in place. How about some respect? How about some reverence? And one of the points of this book is, God is worthy of devotion because God is worthy of devotion. If me and you never get another thing in this fleshly life, He's worthy of devotion. If me and you lose every physical thing that we got, just like Job did, God is still holy and righteous and good, and He is worthy of worship. That's one of the lessons of this book. It's not about what God has done for us. It's about who God is. And Satan questioned that. He questioned God's right to receive worship. Oh, they just do it because you bless them. And the whole book is trying to teach us against that. What's the second application we make? Faithfulness. Mark your spot. We will come back. But let's look at some New Testament passages. Again, we're trying to apply it. We're not rehashing the entire book of Job. We're trying to make applications. So go to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. You can't read this book. I hope we haven't done peripherally. We haven't spent 10 years on it, but I hope we dug in deep enough that it's had some value. And if one of the things that should lead to value, if you just do any serious thought at all about the book of Job, faithfulness is one of the things that will kick out, because Job never knew. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7, it's a parenthetic statement. We walk by faith, not what? Not by sight. Job never was told what this was about. You know, when he was throwing questions up to God, I don't know why. I don't understand this. God could have ended Job's questions with one sentence. And the sentence is, "This is Satan, and I'm with you." That's it. All he had to say. Satan thinks he can put enough obstacles in your life that you will renounce me. Prove him wrong. That's how quickly it could have ended. The doubts are gone. The questions are gone, but it's no longer a valid test. And we talked about that on our first study. Hopefully now it'll make a little bit more sense to us. We've all got a stubborn streak in us. Some of us have a big stubborn streak in us. And we have all probably done something just to prove somebody else wrong. Oh, you don't think I can do that? Well, just sit back and watch. I'll show you. Could you imagine in the first chapter, if God came to Job and he said, "You're not going to believe what he said about you. You're not going to believe what he said about me. He thinks you're going to renounce me. He thinks you just worship me because of what you get. He doesn't think you're really sincere. Prove him wrong. I don't know what he's going to do to you. I just kind of gave him free rein except for your life. He can't kill you, but he can do everything else. I don't know what it'll be, but it's probably going to be bad. Hang in there." What do you think Job does? He hangs in there. But it's not a valid test anymore. Now it's not faith. Because he knows how it's going to end. It's not. Job's walking by faith, not by sight. Because he don't know. He has no idea why. And a lot of statements he made and a lot of accusations he made back that up. He didn't know. But he still had some faith. At his weakest moments, It was the stuff he did know that got him through the things that he didn't. The song that we just sang, "I know my Redeemer lives." You know who said that? You know who wouldn't the writer get that phrase? Job 19:25. I don't know why this is happening. To his friends, "You must have sinned. Why don't you come clean?" "I don't know what you're talking about. And I don't exactly know why you think what you think. I don't understand this. I don't know this. I can't. But I tell you what I do know. There is a Redeemer who lives." That's faith. And that was said a long time before Isaiah was prophesying about a lamb to the slaughter. That was a long time before Micah was talking about a city of the birth. And it was the patriarchal days. And he knew that. And that makes all the difference, doesn't it? A big part of the foundation of anybody's faith. I love that phrase. I think it was Elihu. When he talked about the storms, sometimes the clouds cover up the sun. The sun's always there. Sometimes today was it today or yesterday? We had a pretty cloudy day. I don't know which. I mean, Just this past week, we've had a pretty cloudy day. I don't remember which one it was. It's not like the sun disappeared. You just couldn't see it. All the overcast, all the whatever. And yet, Elihu's making the point. It's always there. The sun exists. It breaks through the clouds. The sun shines again. And a lot of things Job don't know, but he's walking by faith. Look at Romans 11. We walk by faith, not by sight. Okay? Romans 11. Here's a direct quotation from Job, by the way. You know, for those times we feel in the dark like Job probably felt. Just make sure we remember. We're not owed any explanations. Don't look back at this all these thousands of years later and say, you know, Job, God should have told him. Can't believe he didn't tell him. God didn't have to tell us anything. We're not hanging over him with an IOU in our hand. He doesn't owe us anything. He's not in debt to us. Look in Romans 11. Oh, the depth, verse 33, of the riches of the wisdom and knowledge of God. You know, Job was a wisdom literature. A lot of advice was given, but a lot of wisdom. God himself said, you know, there's been a lot of counsel, but it's been dark. Hadn't been a lot of light coming through. And yet here's all wisdom and all knowledge. Oh, the depth of that. How unsearchable are his judgment and his ways past finding out. Unless he tells us, we will never know. And those three friends could have talked till they took their last breath. They've never figured it out. Unsearchable are his ways and his judgments. For who knows the mind of the Lord? That's what last week's study was. Job, where were you at when I did this? And where were you at when I put this into effect? And tell me what you understand about this. What was the answer to that? I don't know. I'll put my hand over my mouth. Job got it. Who has known the mind of the Lord? Who has been his counselor? Job, did I ask you how to do this? Did I ask you how to hang the stars? Did I tell you how to control the ways? Did I ask for your advice on that? Did I need help? Verse 34. Who's known the mind? Who's been his counselor? Here we go, verse 35. Or who has first given to him that it should be repaid to him again? Paraphrase that. I don't owe you. I'm not in debt to you. We didn't do something for him that now puts him on the ledger. We walk by faith, not by sight. And sometimes we're walking like Job in the dark. We don't understand why. We don't understand. We'll talk more about that as we go through. But the point is, God deserves to be served every day. Satan was wrong about his character. He's not worthy of worship because of what he gives to us. He's worthy of worship because of what he is. And our faith can overcome whatever circumstances. Our faith can overcome whatever challenges come into our life. That's what we learn from Job. What's the next on the list? Patsy, you've been going through them? Wow. How easy is it to read Job and come away with an idea? Wow, there's some bad things that can happen to you in this life. We're looking at the big pictures. Why would a man serve God? Job has an answer for that. What kind of faith does it take? Job has an answer for that. What about suffering? Job has an answer for that. Turn to James chapter 1. This is a complex subject. And it's not an easy problem, even for Christians, to work through in their mind. Just make sure we don't do like Job did in some of his insinuations, and that is try to throw the blame back into God's lap. Job 1 verse 7. Let's start at verse 13. Let no man say when I'm tempted, I'm tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempts any man. Would that be true in Job? Job went through some trials, didn't he? I thought God doesn't tempt. That's what it says. Who was? Satan. This was Satan's working the strings on this thing. Verse 14. Every man is tempted when he's drawn away by his own lust. Is God the one putting lustful things in front of us? No, who is? Satan is. Every man is tempted when he's drawn away by lust. And when lust has conceived, it brings forth sin. Don't lose the order. It is altogether possible to be tempted by something, to have a desire out there. That's not in and of itself a sin. The temptation is the temptation. When is the sin birthed? When you take action on that lust. Look at it again. Verse 14. Every man is tempted when he's drawn away by his own lust. There are things that we are all pulled by. That's what the enticement is. And then when it's conceived, it brings forth sin. Me and you have been tempted by a lot of times and we didn't fall. Sometimes we endured the enticement. We endured the trial. We endured the lust, whatever thing might have been. Sometimes we didn't. That's when sin entered. And sin, when it's finished, brings forth death. The problem of pain, sin, just the things of life, that's not the Creator's problem. That was the created's problem. That was creation's problem. When sin entered in, death came with it. And all the things that are associated with that, the pain, the disappointment, the hurt, don't blame God when these bad things happen. That would be like me getting a speeding ticket and I blame you. There are consequences to sin. And the interesting thing about Job is, the part about Job's affliction is that it affects God's people. And it's not always because of our sin. Job wasn't suffering because of his own sin. But how was it Satan had all those things? Because there was sin and death in the world at that point. It could be that me and you get hit tonight going home by a DUI drunk driver. That's going to impact our life. Not because of our sin, but because of sin in the world. Sometimes we are impacted, and it's not altogether because of us. That's what the friends missed out on. Job, you're suffering, therefore you must be what? You must be sinful. Now, well, sin brought consequences, and sin did put things into our life. What Job teaches us is sometimes we suffer because we live in this world full of sin and death. And that's what makes it so hard for me and you. The old standby phrase, why do bad things happen to good people? That's a problem for godly people. We don't like to see the just suffer. Do you like seeing that? Of course not. And because we don't like see it, can we maybe, like Job, take about a half-inch step to the left and say, that's just not fair? Do you not care? Do you not see? Job said those things. Lamentation number 3. Jeremiah was the writer, the prophet. But Lamentation number 3. I want to show you something that we need to remember on our bad days. Lamentations kind of gets overlooked. First of all, we think about the prophet Jeremiah. We think about Jeremiah. We think about the book. We think of the 40 years of work. Lamentations is that real short book that happens after it's all said and done. It's basically, Lamentations is a funeral oration. Jeremiah walking through the town and Jerusalem is destroyed. The walls are gone. The temple's gone. The people's gone. Nothing's left but the leftovers. It's war-torn. And he's walking through, tears everywhere, and he's just writing down the laments, the sadness that's going to him. But chapter 3 is altogether different. The other chapters are basically describing the city, describing the destruction of it, and so on. Chapter 3 is kind of Jeremiah pouring his heart out to God. And I just want to show you, just listen to what he said. See if it sounds any familiar. Pick up with me in verse 1 to Lamentation 3. I am a man that has seen affliction by the rod of his wrath. He has led me and brought me to darkness, not light. Against me, this is Jeremiah talking to God about God. Against me he has turned. He turns his hand against me all the day. My flesh and my skin he's made old. He's broken my bones. He's built against me. He compassed me with gall and travel. He has set me in dark places. Verse 7, he has hedged me about and I can't get out. He's put a heavy chain on me. Verse 8, I cry and I shout and he doesn't hear my prayer. Look in verse 14. I am a derision to all my people. They sing songs about me. They're making fun of me. Look in verse 17. You have removed my soul far from peace. I don't even know what it's like to prosper anymore. Could you not take that and stick it in any of Job's three speeches? And it was just like it was supposed to have been there. Jeremiah's saying some of the same things Job said. I don't get this. You're the one that sent me on this mission, Lord. You're the one that commissioned me to go and speak to these people. I did it the best I could. All it got me was beaten, thrown into a pit, starved to death. All it did was make my hometown look at me as if I was a leper. All it did, look where I am. Verse 19. I remember my affliction and my misery. Verse 21. And then I recall to my mind, and I have hope. It's the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because His compassions do not fail. They are new every morning. Great is Thy faithfulness. Look at the last phrase in verse 24. I will hope in Him. Verse 26. It is good that a man should both hope and wait for the salvation of the Lord. You can take that and stick it in Elihu's speech, and it'll fit. Hope does a lot of things. You know, Jeremiah has gone through a lot because of his faithfulness. And it seems to be in that first part of chapter 3, he's saying, you know, this just doesn't seem to be very fair. Do you not, have you forgotten? Don't you know what I did for you? Why am I having to do this? Why do you not hear me? Why have you let... And then verse 19, but I remember. I remember your mercy. I remember that every single day it's fresh. Your mercy and your justice is fresh. And therefore, I have hope. And that'll get us through those dark clouds. That'll get us through when it's so overcast we don't see the sun. Don't forget the sun's there. And it'll creep back through. That's the lesson that we get. What was the next one, Patsy? Endurance. Wow. The New Testament talks about that. Have you heard of the endurance of Job? We usually use the old King James. Have you heard of the patience of Job? Almost every time in the New Testament, when you see the word patience, it's not talking about sitting in a dentist's office. I was supposed to be here at 9 o'clock. No. We think of patience as just sitting around and just waiting it out. It's talking about enduring. Have you heard of the endurance of Job? What he went through and what he continued to wait through. It's a message for the ages. Look into, go back to Job chapter 35. Job 35. One of the statements that Elihu made when he just said, I can't be quiet anymore. We have to trust through the unknown. We submit to the Creator's wisdom because He's in control, and we need to remember that when the details get a little fuzzy or foggy. The fact that we don't see a purpose doesn't mean that there is a purpose. Or that there isn't one, rather. Look at the last phrase in verse 14. Job 35, verse 14. Although you say that you do not see Him and that judges is before Him, therefore trust in Him. Newer versions say, wait on Him. Have you heard of the endurance of Job? Have you heard what he waited through? Have you heard what he endured? Elihu's trying to wait it out. I know you don't get it. You don't have to get it. You trust. A lot of stress will leave, and a lot of inner peace will come. Doesn't remove the stress. It doesn't remove the thorn, to use Paul's word. The family issue is still the family issue. The health issue is still the health issue. And put that in 1,000 other issues that are still the issues. But when there's trust and there's this enduring spirit, we'll get through it just like Job did. That's the lesson. I saw a quote one time. How was it going? What God doesn't deliver us from, He will deliver us through. Think about that. And now think about that according to Jesus' prayer in the garden. Lord, deliver me from this. Take this cup away from me. Well, God didn't take it away from him. Did Jesus get through it? Yeah. He prayed for deliverance from it. That didn't come. Nevertheless, your will be done. And he made it through. The very thing he was hoping he wouldn't have to go through, he made it through. I don't know who said that. I may have been paraphrased a little bit off. But if he does deliverance from it, he'll deliver us through it. Now that through might be your last breath. But that's okay too. And to the faithful, that's not just okay. That's the better end of the deal. Last one. What was it, Patsy? The whole book is about Jesus. And when I mean the whole book, I mean the whole book is about Jesus. Job doesn't stick out in that instance. But I know that my Redeemer lives. You know what we could do if we could go back in a time machine? We could tell him his name. You know what I wish, guys? You know what I wish my three friends? I wished I had a mediator that could take my hand and God's hand and reunite us. We could go back in a time machine and tell him who that mediator was. And tell them exactly what it took to reunite. What was sacrificed and what was necessary. For that, the book is about him. And then we could go back in a time machine and say, oh, by the way, Job, he was a lot more blameless. He was a lot more blameless than you. And he suffered a whole lot more than you. There's lessons in the book that we take about Christ, about the Lord. We mentioned this was wisdom literature. Go back to chapter 2. Think about some of the wisdom that you see in this book. Let's think about Job's wife for a minute. The wisdom that she was apparently, at least in the moment of stress, living under. I asked the question earlier on, the very first point we looked at. Why would a man serve God? Is it simply because, that was Satan's proposition, it's simply because of what he does for you. If that's taken off the table, there's no sense serving him anymore. That's exactly what Job's wife's wisdom was. Look in Job chapter 2, verse 9. Will you retain your integrity? Are you still going to spout off this stuff you've been saying? Renounce him and die. To Job's wife, the question of, is God worthy of worship for his sake? Her answer is in big capital letters, no. He has left us. We need to leave him too. You need to curse him and then take a long walk off a short plank and be done with this. That's her wisdom. The only one on the face of the earth who could really hurt with him, who could empathize with him. She lost as much as he did, with except to the health part. She knows what it's like to lose all your kids. She knows what it's like to lose all the stuff. She lost everything he did except the health. She responded a whole lot differently. The friend's wisdom. Go back to chapters 4. That would be one of them. Chapter 4. Where's the friends getting all their great ideas from? Chapter 4, remember verse 8? I have seen. Verse 12, my ear has received a little thereof. I've seen things. I have heard things. Verse 13, I've had visions in the night. Oh, Job, you can trust me. I've heard a lot of things. I don't live under a rock. I've seen a lot of things. You know, I didn't just fall off the truck yesterday. I've had a lot of visions. Look in chapter 8. The friend's wisdom. Chapter 8, verse 8. I inquire you, Job, I'm pleading with you. Just listen to me, buddy. I pray you of the former age. Apply yourself to that which our fathers searched out. Oh, Job, the ancients, the elders, all those who lived before us, they said it was about, if you're suffering, you must ascend. So what are they? Where's Job's his wife had a wisdom. She says, curse him. Listen to this stuff. The friends had wisdom, all about experience, all about living under the sun. What I've seen, what I've heard, what I've dreamed, what other people in times before us saw and heard and dreamed. Just go back to them, Job. That's where we'll get our wisdom. Then you had God's wisdom. Actually, I guess we could say Job's wisdom. And Job's wisdom was, I just don't understand this, so I'm going to throw some questions out. Now, Job's wisdom was kind of, some of it was accusatory. Job's wisdom, some of it was I don't get it. And now what about ours? Our wisdom. Unlike Job's wife, let our wisdom be better than. Oh, what are you giving me? Hey, I'll serve you as long as it's in my benefit. Keep the blessings coming. We've got to have a deeper faith than that. God's worthy to be served because He's worthy to be served. Not because me and you are living in a nice place. It's got to be deeper than the friend's wisdom. It's got to be deeper than what we have experienced and seen. Because let's be honest. None of us have experienced and seen just a whole lot. We've all lived in our small little cocoon. We've all lived in our little small part of the globe. What we have known has been inside that small circle. And plus, the friends, forget that. The friends we're talking about, God's into the stick. Which it doesn't matter where we live or how long we live. We're not going to get that. Romans 11 says we will never understand the depth of that wisdom and knowledge. So we've got to have a deeper wisdom than that. Job's wisdom of every time something goes bad, we start throwing questions up to God. Don't you care? Don't you see? I thought you loved me. We've got to have a deeper wisdom than that. There's all kind of stuff going on here. So, last thing, just to throw, why do we serve Him?
Because
He's worthy to be served. If we get that, then we've got the message of Job. If we're walking by faith, not by sight, we've gotten the message from Job. If we are willing to endure whatever we have to endure, that's the message from Job. What was the fourth one, Patsy? I can't remember. What was that fourth one on the list? Okay, sorry, I just skipped one there. So what was number three? I must have missed one. Okay. Suffering, there you go. Yeah. Whatever I have to suffer. We put those together. Whatever I have to suffer, I can endure. God will deliver me through that if He doesn't take it from me. That's the message from Job. Any questions or comments before the bell rings? I'll just tell you, I'd mentioned this on the very first study. I'd never taught Job before. I mean, you read it, but I've never done what we did in going through it this quarter. It's been eye-opening and a wonderful, wonderful blessing for me, and I hope it has been for you. Next Sunday, we start our new quarter. Brent will be teaching the first period of Genesis. That'll be Sunday and Wednesday. So make sure if you haven't got your outlines, that they're back in the back. If you didn't get them Sunday, they're back in the back for you. That'll be Sunday and Wednesday, back to back, for the next 3 months.